하나 듣겠습니다.
Submitted what would be presented, but this is, I think, an addenda which is part of their corporate plan, which I think is more just for information and not actually part of the presentation for today. I believe the presentation has been structured to actually address all the issues as per the request of the portfolio committee. So without any further ado, I think I would then request that the presentation is made, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to yourself and honorable members. I thought it's important that I just explain before I hand over to Mr. Mkize, who will be making the presentation. The management of management of liquid fuel in South Africa is split into two within the Department of Energy. There are policy matters that have been centralized under the policy and planning branch of the department. That unit develops policy, develops strategies, and is under a program called Program 2. Then there is Program 3 that does the implementation once the policy has been developed and adopted at cabinet level. So I think it is important for me to indicate that the management of these matters fall under two different programs within the department. So we are here this morning as representatives of those two programs. I am here leading the delegation from the department on behalf of the DG, and I need to register an apology for him because he is held up in meetings in Pretoria. Mr. Pane is also with the DG and he has the other program. But having said that, we, myself and Mr. Tise, who is here, we have enough information and authority to be able to respond and also to present on any matter on liquid fuels to the committee. So, Chair, with your permission, I'm going to hand over to Mr. Munden Kiza, who is the Chief Director responsible for hydrocarbons policy within the department, to talk to us on the strategic stocks policy.
Thank you. Thank you. Morning to the Deputy Minister, Honorable Secretary of the Kokolo Committee, as well as the members, as well as members of the Kokolo Committee and colleagues this morning. I'm going to present covering the current situation, including the issues and challenges, then deal with the brief discussion on the private sector involvement in strategic fuel stocks, the plans to increase the current stock supply, including funding infrastructure considerations, a brief discussion on the managing storage facility, including plans to make it operational, or touch a little bit on that, and as well as increasing access for new players in the fuel sector. Some of them will remain with the more high level because as we proceed with the program of strategic stocks, the increasing of strategic stocks, that's when then some of the things will evolve and get more into details and move from build-up order of magnitude estimates to very definitive estimates in terms of cost and other things. In terms of the presentation, the outline will come to the definition of strategic stocks, issues and challenges, then the analysis of our situation, then the proposed stock holding, then the recommended allocation of strategic stocks, look at the role of SRF, the procurement and management of strategic stocks, as well as the financing of thereof, and then just touch on the progress and way forward. Strategic stocks are defined as both crude oil and refined products. These are in nature, held by government and oil companies to cater for catastrophes as well as the years of fuel supply disruption. They do include stocks that are kept in tanks, which are sometimes referred to as tank bottoms, as well as pipeline fuel, which is a dead stock that sits in pipelines. Refined products in road and rail tankers, stock held on behalf of armed forces, commercial and safety stocks, or BAPA stocks, as they sometimes are referred to, that are held by the oil company. I must also mention that in terms of pipeline fuel, they could be a need to be involved as from a strategic angle in terms of provision of that, like we have seen SSF playing a role in terms of providing a line fuel for the new multi-product pipeline, which talks now to strategically engaging in holding stocks, but it's not necessarily strategic stocks. And then the products that are kept there include diesel, petrol, jet fuel, and LPG, which is liquefied petroleum gas. The mandatory strategic stocks will only be released upon declaration of a state of emergency in respect of liquid fuel supply by the Minister of Energy. that will be in line with the trigger and release mechanism that the strategic stocks implementation plan will then talk to. The issues and challenges, maybe to start off there, to say that we've got the strategic stocks being like an insurance policy. Otherwise, they don't seem to match until one gets into the VSL survival disruption. That is when then one realizes that I need to have had these stocks in place. And it then becomes a risk mitigation measure, which means then one must be able to look at the probability of the risk and the consequence or impact of the risk being realized. And then the challenge is then how much insurance policy should the country take, and then the extent of the risk or the country's exposure to that particular risk. Hence, there are studies that have been conducted to try to get to that, to respond to those questions. And then one study that was undertaken by the department in 2006 indicated that if we were to have no fuel at all in our country, just one day we lose approximately $1 billion. And the severe strategies of 2005 and December to January 2006, they also led to that investigation that was headed by Advocate Morani Singer Cancer, which commission gave an impetus to studies related to strategic stocks. There were also a few changes in changes in specification and standards in 2006, which we now refer to as Cleaner Fuels 1. There was an energy security master plan, Liquid Fuels of 2007, which talked to the issue of state also playing a role in sourcing crude oil for the local industry, which also dealt with the energy security broadly, because strategic stocks are a subsection of energy security in its entirety. We have the National Energy Act, Section 17, thereof, which empowers the minister to instruct an agency or person to hold strategic stocks. Then, with the strategic stocks, the challenge is then the acquiring and holding of those strategic stocks in terms of the cost, because you need to pay for the stocks and then be able to then deal with the maintenance of thereof. There are also statutory and operational models for stockholding agents, which in our case is a strategic fuel fund, because if we need to look at how we legally position this entity to be able to execute its mandate without problem. Then there is the funding of financing mechanisms for strategic stocks. This issue comes in line with the fact that most of the time whenever we're talking any project or development in the liquid fuel sector, because we've got a regulated environment, we get to a situation where there must be some form of levy that is imposed, which then puts a pressure on the consumer. And hence, sensitivity regarding overburdening the consumer needs to be exercised. Hence, then, requiring us to look at alternative funding mechanisms. That is also related to the agency model chosen, because there could be some element of hedging the stock that is being kept, and thereby be able to get some kind of profit, which will then go towards increasing the stock level, or on top of levy that will be imposed, so that there can be funds that are required to be able to acquire stocks as well as keep holding them. The challenge is also that we find ourselves in this global and national economic climate, which has not really permitted much movement in this regard, has also been an element that we needed to be conscious of when we look at the funding of an economic economy. Then there is also an issue of stock training, particularly if one is keeping finished products like petrol, diesel, one needs to be able to release them to the market before they destabilize and there are challenges of quality. So this requires that the facilities be closer to the market for that. And it also requires cooperation with the private sector, that is the oil companies that are in the marketing of these products. The other issue and a challenge would be one of monitoring and enforcement, because it wouldn't help to think that you've got strategic stocks and then when now push comes to shove, we find that you don't have the stocks have not been kept at the level that was anticipated or mandated or agreed upon. Hence, they need to be to ensure that they adhere to those stock levels. We need to have the right personnel systems and procedures in place to make sure that there is continuous monitoring and enforcement, as well as having the regular penalties where required. This will be particularly difficult, especially if one looks at also getting the private sector, all companies, to keep strategic stock. The other issue will be also around systems of replenishment once the stock has been drawn, because we've got to have those trigger and release mechanisms, after which then we need to be able to return to the same position in terms of the risk profile once we've had that severe shortage. After the country sitting on the southern tip of Africa, we remain a net importer of crude oil as well as refined petroleum products. And the terms of refined petroleum products have also seen an increase in the importation, which comes both from the point of view of the increased demand vis-a-vis our domestic supply, as well as also our unplanned and planned shutdown that results in more products having to be imported. And as a country with about 70% of our fuel consumption depending on finished imported crude oil, we then have less than 3% of it coming from the national resources, with the building resources for gas in most of the base for our gas to liquid refinery, as well as the crude to liquid refinery in Secunda that constitute the indigenous resources used. With more than 50%, more than half of our crude comes from the Middle Eastern countries. So in terms of looking at the strategy stock, we take it from the blueprint of our energy policy, which is the White Paper on Energy Policy of 1998, which requires South Africa to keep 90 days of net imports. This was taken directly from what the OECD countries are doing under the International Energy Agency program. However, this doesn't reflect South Africa's risk exposure, and hence a study had to be conducted so that we look more intimately at home in terms of what is the right level of profile that we should cater for as South Africa. I'll get back to that later on. As things stand, there's about 10.3 million barrels per day that are held according to the ministerial directive. This is just to help us to indicate the kind of imports that we get into the country. As you can see, the 30% coming from Saudi Arabia. We used to have a lot Iran, and most of us know what has happened in that regard, hence the decline. And we have also seen us increasing in terms of our African sister countries that there's also an increase in the trade. I must mention that the government doesn't play a role in terms of importation as such, because it is the oil refineries that are directly importing from the various from these countries. And also, even the country, the operations in South Africa are also not into the procurement as such. They are more like scheduling what kind of food diet must come in. The actual procurement happens at the international firms that are responsible for such procurement for the multinationals that are operating in the country. As I said, the shortages of 2005 and 2006 led to that investigative commission, which amongst other things highlighted the shortcomings that we needed to attend to. These included that we only kept food oil stocks that were in Sagana, and that is there in Sagana, being kept by SFS. The challenge also around getting them to move quickly from Sagana to any of the refineries in any time of need was also noted as a challenge. And then oil companies themselves do not have an obligation to keep strategic stocks, whether as crude or as a fish product. So what they actually have is mainly the commercial stocks, that is the buffer stocks that you cater from for some assets, but not of a severe nature like one would be able to do in terms of strategic stocks. And there were no precise trigger and release mechanisms in place. And in looking at the situation, the study that was conducted gave rise to a proposal that South Africa should keep a total of 60 days of strategic stock. All these 60 days kept by government, with 42 days of stock, that is an equivalent of stock based on the importation of the 70% that is imported in terms of crude oil, being kept then as crude oil, same place as Saldana, where we've got adequate capacity of about 4.5 million barrels storage capacity there. And then the balance of 80 days shall then be refined product. It further requires that all companies be obliged to keep the 14 days of refined product as strategic source, which again will also be released through an interactive in terms of the different release mechanism to be instituted. The basis of the proposal originated from the release exposure. We're looking at the issues of geopolitics, for example, and Paris in the Indian Ocean. And then we see that we will become less dependent on the nuclear system good oil, but we still are, if we consider it, but more than 50% still coming there from. And also we've improved in terms of getting our West African countries to also supply us with crude oil. Hence, the threat then has reduced. It's not as high as the requirements to keep 90 days of stock like it was originally put forth in the budget on energy policy. The funding of strategic stocks. With being a country with many socio-economic challenges, so then in terms of the funding of the stocks and the related infrastructure, we should then have to take that into consideration and not find ourselves in ordinarily allocating a lot of funds, channeling funds to the issue of strategic stock holding at the disadvantage of other socio-economic imperatives. Looking at the fact that even on the on petrol and diesel, they are some basis that also are able to assist in other territorial work, which includes, amongst others, the road infrastructure improvements in the country. The other thing that we also to take into cognizance is that being at the southern tip of Africa, we are far from the major market. And then the time it takes about an hour lead time for over 5 days from the sources of supply, once an order is in place to come get the product into our shores. Then there are also 40 days of demurrage, offloading, refining and transportation to the inland region, because it is really in the inland southern hub, the Gambian hub, where we have a hub where there's a lot of over consumption, accounting for 62% of the country. So, in terms of the location, that the facility itself should get closer to the market, as I've alluded earlier on. That is now the finished product. And then the crude oil should be kept closer. The capital is Saldana, but then we need to be able to get the right crude oil grades that would be useful or usable by our oil refinery. As well as the close relationship with the operator to make sure that the quality aspects are dealt with. Although it is understood that in the event of a severe supply crisis, one would also consider that there could be some lowering or waiver in terms of some quality aspects of the fuel. So, looking at the role of the strategic fuel pump, is that up to the 1990s, SSF was charged with purchases of all crude oil supplies for South African oil industry. This is pre-94. So, they have both the strategic and commercial role. Post-1994, SSF managed strategic stock on behalf of government and are not really moving into the commercial role. And neither are they purchasing oil, crude oil supplies for the country. So, SSF, in terms of the proposal, is responsible for the procurement, maintenance, and management of strategic stock held by government. That the management of strategic stock, SSF has a contract arrangement with third parties like Transnet Pipelines and independent storage companies in being able to move the strategic stock around as and when required. And that all companies be responsible for the management of their own strategic stock, but ensuring that the proper monitoring and enforcement to ensure that they indeed keep those products. In terms of the balancing of strategic stocks, in the draft policy document, there was a level that was estimated to around 6 cents a liter for diesel and petrol and jet fuel was proposed. But then this would help in terms of the procurement of resources as well as the construction of facilities. Then, in looking at that, in terms of the levy, there was also a proposal that a percentage of the income that SSF will generate while managing the stocks will then be used for this purpose. And then the oil companies were going to be compensated through the pricing mechanism, both the working capital, that is the infrastructure that is put in place, as well as the ongoing stock cheating by them. On the 28th of March 2012, the then minister tabled the draft stock policy to cabinet, and cabinet actually focused more on ensuring that the security nature of a stockpile is addressed, and that it be reviewed to separate policy as from operational measures, and look at the financing options in consultation with the Minister of Finance. The matter was then duly referred to the Cabinet Committee of Justice, Crime Prevention and Security before resubmission to the Cabinet. Then on 4 July, the policy statement was presented to the Minister. They supported the document and directed that there be collaboration between the DOE and National Treasury to funding a solution to the funding mechanism for strategic stocks. In November, after complying with the Cabinet Directive of March 2012, the revised draft policy document was presented to the Justice Crime Prevention Security Cluster. They supported the document and then that also to publish in terms of the Energy Act. The document was really published, and then in 2013 there was a mass publication. And the draft implementation plan was submitted for public comment in compliance with the Act. The working group was also set up, comprising DOE, National Treasury, and SSF. They looked into these options, initial submission was then after the requesting approval of the proposed funding mechanism and seeking concurrence of the finance minister. There have been delays around the issue of a formal response from National Treasury with regard to this. And in the prior process, the department has initiated a process to develop a legal framework that would allow SSF to achieve its objectives and that of government. That is looking also at how SSF can work around improving its profit position from the point of view of using that to acquire more stock. We have had initial tests in that regard by way of consulting SSF as well as the research group. This consultation will culminate the concept document. Each concept document will then be used in drafting the legislation. Also, I understand that SSF is a group of companies which just soon have this strategic planning session from which more clarity is going to be provided going into the process, because after that, then the process of actually drafting legislation should be more simpler and streamlined. So, in terms of the utilization of infrastructure, like the mineral extraction farm by SSF, it so far it remains an operational matter that the SSF will be talked to in the presentation. And we as Department of Energy respond accordingly based on what their recommendations are in taking the matter forward. The development of new infrastructure will also incorporate the need for the promotion of the broad-based black economic environment settings. But I must say that here it's not like the owning of infrastructure as knowing the run of the mill, the kind of operation that we have, because here we're looking at a specific asset being the strategic stock and not stock holding for normal commercial operation. The private sector will come in, as I indicated earlier on, from the requirement that they also hold a 14% holding fee of stock for finished products. That is where then the issue of private sector comes in. And there are requirements from a private sector perspective in terms of them being able also to provide, to comply with the requirements for broad-based economic environment. And then in our discussions also with Transnet on infrastructural matters, we have discussed the issue of lack of infrastructure being a barrier to entry. We have observed that even in the Pipeline Act, where we've got third-party access into infrastructure networks, we are still facing problems because it's based on uncommitted capacity. And we find from time to time that there is no uncommitted capacity that can be utilized by these players. And also, when one needs to get products in from the high speeds, you need to ensure that you already have secured storage facilities. There are also discussions in that regard, and also in them looking at the, like for example, the data and stuff output in our engagement with them, they are looking at also creating space for private players and CEEs in particular. Also, the way the line field also being provided by SFS also assists in terms of enabling also other players to be able to come in and use the pipeline without being left out because of space that is already acquired by the traditional oil major. Yeah, I think I'll end it here. Thank you very much. If there are any other questions for me for clarification, but I'm glad to see my colleague.
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. I just wanted to add just a few issues, I think, to provide more clarity on perhaps questions that may be there. The one, Chairperson and honorable members, is that I can say with certainty that there is no crisis in strategic stocks. Now, my colleague here, they develop policy. My job is to monitor its implementation. So on a day-to-day basis, I basically interact with all the companies, with all the players in industry. So there is no crisis. Are there emerging risks? Yes. Definitely there are emerging risks. One of them, which is I think very pertinent, particularly in this part of the world, is that we don't have sufficient storage capacity for LPG. So if, for example, the Chevron refiner goes down like it is down now, then we have the problem of supplying Western Cape with LPG. So I think I wanted to just give a sense of where we are in the country. The system is able to respond, but we have said this, when there was an issue with the Bergen terminal, that we need an alternative for Chevron. Because without a Chevron that is operational, this part of the country suffers. That's the reality. So the decision taken by the department and NERSA to grant the Bergen terminal import, the construction of that import terminal was informed by the fact that we can't rely on one facility. So that is the one part. Then I think the other issue, the president and members, that I would like to bring here is that we are having a lot of unplanned refinery shutdown. That's the reality. What does that mean? From our vantage point, honorable members, is that the country needs a new refinery. We do need a new refinery. What sits in the National Development Plan that by 2017 a decision must be taken on refining? We fully believe that that was an informed directive and that that decision must be taken by 2017 on a new refinery. How that refinery is then structured, who builds it, and so on, I think that matters then for discussion. But we firmly believe that there must be a decision on new refinery. On LPG, given the experiences that we have had, we must have storage capacity built. We must have storage capacity built in key cities in our country. There must be bulk storage in places like Kimberley. There must be bulk storage in places like East London and so on. And we believe that the state must play a catalyzing role in that. The state must lead in that process. Because I am at the operational level, I also need to inform the committee that we have not been having a very good last 2 weeks in terms of supply. The last 2 weeks has been rough, particularly in Saudi. It has been rough. Now, all of that, you can trace it to two things. The refining capacity, the fact that when one or two of the refineries at the coast has a problem, then we run into challenges. But I must indicate that not all the oil companies were affected. There was you know, they were affected at different degrees. There were companies that were not affected at all because they keep enough buffer stock to cater for anything that can go wrong. Now, one of the proposals we will be making to our colleagues at policy is that we need to find a way in the strategic stocks policy of making sure that the oil companies keep enough buffer stock at their own cost, not at the cost of the moratorium. So I think in conclusion, what I want to say is that there is a lot of activity in as far as managing operations are concerned. We have, as we speak now, on a daily logistics planning meeting with the oil companies, whereas when everything is fine, we meet every week, once a week. We are now having to meet every day to make sure that things are fine until the Chevron refinery here is back 100%. It's currently operating at 30%. And the other two refineries at the coast, the sub-ref owned by BP and Shell, as well as Enron, until they get back to 100% operations, we're going to have to continue those discussions. I mean, those daily planning, because in the planning we decide where the stock should be going and what to sacrifice and so on. These are the nature of the discussions that we hold there. So I thought that it's important that I bring the committee at least up to a certain level of, in terms of information on the operational issue, even though they were not necessarily on the agenda for this morning. Thank you.
I'm sure they are going to be raised. The court has been complaining about shortage of gas, and we've had experiences encountering the difficulties you're talking about. I do appreciate that we're going to be discussing strategic stocks today, so we'll try and focus on that. But there is a relationship that we must talk about of the issues that we've just raised that are very important for the South African public. As was saying earlier on, that in the absence of a crisis, the issue of strategic stock for the public doesn't arise. But the issue of supply on a day-to-day basis is a real issue. So that we're going to have to talk about. I think after the presentation by SFF, we've got to return briefly to that question.
No, Chapter, and I think it's best that we do take the presentation so that we can have the policy overview and we can have the specifics, then have the discussion. So with your permission, I think the SFF can then go straight to the presentation.
Chairman of the Pacific and Energy, fellow members, colleagues, good morning. My name is Vanu Ngusa from SFF. And with me, I've got Sibule Ngong, who's going to be assisting me with the second part of the presentation. Chairman, I think it is proper, before I start with our presentation this morning, to acknowledge the well-justified comment and criticism on the documentation from SFF. I think at this level of responsibility, something that should not be happening, and we take full responsibility for it. think by the end of the meeting, we have a discussion with the court to just make sure that the right people between the committee and SFF are talking so that such documentation get provided well in time. Because we've known on the request from PCE more than 3 weeks ago, and the presentation is prepared as such. And most of the issues that the PCE requested, the issues will be in our realm of knowledge. So I have to get the responsibility for it, and we will rectify it, honorable chairman and honorable members. Now, I'll just go through the presentation itself, and then also maybe take this time to explain the document that was handed out this morning. Just on the comment of how one presents, I found that the presentation itself is not as detailed, i.e. I was looking over the point of the presentation itself. Just so that there is no misconception of what I said, I decided to prepare a 200-page document covering each and every slide that I'll be talking on. It covers issues of who SFF is. It talks about SFF management, which is the document chairperson, and it also talks about the governance structure of SFF. It then talks about the operating philosophy of the organization and issues of risk management and fraud management within the organization. I think it is important, it became important that one prepares this document because while I might be coming year in, year out to the portfolio committee, but the members of the portfolio committee changes all the time or as and when changes are required. So I may not assume that everybody is familiar with who we are. Hence the decision to prepare this documentation. It is a well detailed document, and I will not be taking them up through it, but I hope that it becomes a good read and a good reference point of our organization. Chairperson, through our principals, we received the request sealed up there from the PCE in terms of what the Portfolio Committee has achieved. Needed to conduct from SFF. The point was the company overview, including the history, overview of assets that we manage, the status of these assets, an overview of the functioning of the SFF, how do we derive our income, and the financial status of SFF. Then the last bullet point being the future expansion plans for the SFF organization. With background, the format then of the presentation will follow exactly the request from the PCE. I'll do the introduction. I'll talk a bit on the product storage and issue plans, and then Mr. Mwongwa next year will be talking on the finances and how we operate in SFF. Just in terms of history of the organization, the history of SFF started in 1964 when the Government of Economic Affairs initiated the creation of a fund for the stockpiling of strategic crude oil. Subsequent to that initiative, SFF was incorporated in 64 and IBC was a shareholder. And in terms of the guidelines that were laid down in initiative from the Department of Economic Affairs, amounts were collected from oil companies and were then deposited for the fund. Also, there was an external procurement fund managed by government which offered interest-free loans to the fund so that it can start accumulating strategic stocks. Subsequently, the monthly labor was also paid to SFF from the exercise duty of petrol. On the 30th of June, 1935, in a special board meeting of SFF, a resolution was made that amended its memorandum of association, stating more clearly that SFF is to procure, stockpile, and most importantly, produce fuels of strategic importance to our economy. The last bullet will probably explain the involvement of SFF with the likes of NADRAF, the involvement of SFF with the likes of Petro SA then. 15 April 1976, state-owned fund PTY LTD was incorporated. SFF was its sole member and the shareholder.
The main objective of the fund
was simple. Collect the money, do the buying, because SFF has always been a non-profit organization and not for gain or switching to another company. That is just Chairperson, briefly, where we come. And I'm taking that part of history insofar as it relates to how SFF was funded. Of course, the how SFF has operated, and that's a heap of its own. But I just decided, just for this presentation, insofar as joint stock discussions are concerned, I just concentrate on the funding mechanism of SFF in the past. Let me then go to the management structure within SFF. Until 1984, SFF was managed by SASO. It had its own operations, but it was managed by SASO. IEC took over from the management of SASO from the 20th of March 1984. On the 29th of October 2002, Petro SA started managing SFF. And then on 1st of April 2010, that agreement lapsed and SFF took over the management of SFF. Only on the 2nd of January 2013, SFF could say they had their own management, not being managed by an external company, i.e., today, they can say they are real management of SFF are probably 3 years old. But SFF goes all the way back from 1964, which creates a problem. Because an organization, leadership starts from the top. And management of the organization starts from the top. But if you do find an organization that has been managed by different organizations, what is being fused in into what we call SFF today, it's not even SFF, but it's a combination of IDC, SASO, HSA, CF. Let me jump over the historical background and get to what is our mandate as we understand it today. We draw our mandate, Chairperson, from the National Energy Act, only 2008. Which my colleague from the Department of Energy, Mr. Keith, has alluded to, in section 18.1, which basically talks about the creation of stock, the procurement thereof, and the managing of the procure stocks, to be directed from the Minister of Energy. In terms of our operations, we operate from three locations in the country. The first and the biggest one is Saldanha, Western Cape along the White Coast. I'm going to get into detail in terms of what we do there. And then we've got Lingerton here in Cape Town, and then the Old Bushing Control Division, which is based in Saldanha. And then we still maintain the underground bunkers in office, which were used to store crude. In terms of the condition or the status of the facilities in Saldanha, we've got 6 times 2.5 million barrels that are on tanks. As of today, they still got 40 years of useful life still left in them. The facilities are world class, they are ISO listed, quality, environment, and also in terms of OSHA Act. There are 2 tanks dedicated to storage tanks, sorry, to strategic stocks, and the balance are leased out to commercial customers. The reason we've got only 2 dedicated to strategic stocks is because that's the only strategic stock that we've got. You can only lift into 2 tanks. Then the mineraling, we've got 39,200,000 barrel tanks above ground. They are currently undergoing industry tests
Project Manda is to last, and also the facility is ISO 9001 certified. No study stock attached in Malaysia, but only 3 tanks are dedicated to commercial storage. How do we find ourselves? We don't receive any allocation from the state anymore as we used to. So we earn interest on the cash reserves that we've got in the bank, and then when the market is right, we then lease the storage to crude oil shipping companies. And then the funds that we generate are then used to maintain the infrastructure and fund all SSL for operational expenditures. And then funds that are in excess go back to the bank. I'm going to allow Mr. Ngwama to just take us through the financial status of SSF.
Sure, Mr. The financial status of SSF is illustrated as follows. Pre-94 and also just post-94, the earlier years of post-94, SFF was still responsible for the acquisition of the importing of the fuel refined products for the country. And as such, we were able to generate significant revenues. In 95, to take just 3 years, 95, 2005, and 2015, it illustrates the impact of the withdrawal of the policy instruments that were at SFF's disposal. So if you look at the revenue we generated at SFF in 1995, it was 2.6 billion. And if you look 10 years later, that we're sitting at about 43 million rand. And if you look at 2015, we're sitting at 198 million. You can see if you compare the 2 years, 95 and 2015, the revenue of 1995 was 10-fold the revenue of 2015. And that is on real terms, not even nominal terms. And it's all because the withdrawal of the policy instrument, the SFF stopped importing the refined products for the country. It left the company in a situation where it had to start to look inside itself to say, what do we have as SFF that we can utilize to generate revenue and also be able to maintain the facilities and also manage the crude stocks. Because all of those duties require funding. You require employees to afford to maintain the facilities. You also need funding to be able to keep the strategic stocks at a certain number so that there is no evaporation of the hydrocarbons. These crude oil storage tanks were not fully utilized, and as such, the excess capacity that Mr. Nkuta referred to, the balance out of 45 million barrels capacity, we had to lease it out to the oil traders. And the vulnerability of this business model, or it's an accidental business model, is that it is subject to the whims of the crude oil price fluctuations. The boom and bust situations that take place around the oil price, it has a direct impact on the SSF revenue generation and funding capabilities. In periods where the oil price is in a bust, as currently is the case at the moment, the revenues of SSF are in an upward swing. But in scenarios where the revenue, the crude oil price, it is on an upward swing, it is a situation where the oil traders are not induced to buy crude and store with us, and therefore there is no capacity to generate any revenue in those times. And then we have to significantly rely on the revenue that we generate on the cash balances. Be that as it may, all these years of SFF existence, there has not been a situation where SFF has been a burden to the fiscus. We've always managed to live within our means. In the year 2008, I will just recite a little recent history around our revenue generating capacity. In the year 2008, with the world economy at its height, the oil price set a new world record hitting $147 per barrel. The months later, the country, the world was plunged into a economic crisis. And at that time, the revenues of SFF, if we go back to 2005, it was around 45 million, 42 million. But in 2011, because of the plunge in the oil price, due to the plunge in the world economy, and also the oil price followed to from the highs of 147 to $48, the revenues managed to move from 42 million rand to 427 million. So the positive impact of this decline in the oil price started having a meaningful impact on SFF revenues in January 2015, that resulted in our revenues on as well as recovery post 2008 recession. The oil price also started to creep up, and it was creeping up, then the oil traders who store the oil price in our facilities were less inclined to store the crude in our facilities, and as such they didn't renew their contracts. So we moved from a situation where we moved from 42 million rand to 427 in 2011. 2011, when the oil prices were high, the oil traders were not interested in storing crude, and we felt the pain as our revenues came down significantly. However, if we look in our in the June 2014, when the oil price again, the price per barrel was around 111, and now has also gone down to $48 by January 2015, we've seen a positive impact in our revenues as we started to generate revenue from January this year. And we are expecting that our revenues by the end of this financial year should be back into the highs of almost 400 million once more. The revenue generated in the last 3 months of the 2014 calendar year, which was the period between October, November, December, which is our third quarter of the financial year, was 115% more of the revenue that we generated in the first 6 months of the financial year. With the revenue that we generated in the 9 months to December 2014 being 104% higher than the full 12 months of the previous financial year. This is just to illustrate that the positive impact, whenever the oil price is diving low, it has a positive impact in our own revenues, as the oil traders are induced to come and store the crude oil in our facilities. And as such, for this financial year, we are forecasting that our finance, we will be having revenues close to 272 million rand. This is just a graphical representation of the impact of the oil price vis-a-vis our revenue generation. If we see the orange columns, this is our revenue generation that is taking place, with the red line being the oil price. The blue part of the column is the change that took place in 2014 from when the oil price moved from 111 all the way down to 89, eventually $62. We started to see that our revenue generation capacity started to creep up. Then we are expecting once more a revenue in this year of closer to the levels we've last seen in 2011. On the cost side, being operating a business model that is vulnerable to external factors that you do not have control over, the crude oil price, it means one or a company has to have a flexible cost structure where you're able to manage your cost tightly. And I think Mr. Buda did mention that the management has been in place since 2013. If we look at our budget, operating costs versus our actual costs incurred, we can see the brown columns versus the red ones are significantly lower. Meaning that we've always managed throughout these years to cut our coat to the size of our cloth. Comrade Chaffetin, once more, this is an illustration of our revenue capacities or revenue generation. Our revenue from 2012-13 was still coming out of the highs of the 2011 scenario when oil price was still going up. And 2013-14 financial year, we suffered significantly. as the oil price was still going up at around $111. And in this current financial year, the previous financial year that we've closed on the 31st of March this year, we've managed to double our revenue capital generation capacity if you compare the two financial years. And we are forecasting that it will be 320. As per the budget that we submitted earlier this year, we were budgeting at 324, but like I said, the forecast of this financial year is around 324. So we are hoping that given that there is a continuous decline on the crude oil price, as we've seen this morning, I think it was around $48.49, we are hoping that the prolonged period will result in some higher revenues than we budgeted going forward. Our interest income, which we generate out of the cash balances in our balance sheet, we rely on it heavily on times when we are unable to generate revenue out of the storage tanks. We are hoping that it will be somewhat flat, but we are hoping also it will be increased due to the fact that we'll be generating more revenue going forward. Our balance sheet position is as solid as it can be, and given the economic conditions of the world and also the country, it is an envy I would love to believe to many companies. If you look at our assets, it's more than $5 billion. Vis-a-vis our total liabilities, which are anything around half a billion rand, which gives us almost a tenfold advantage of our asset against our liability. So it is a pretty much a solvent company. If you compare our current assets of 2 billion rand with our current liabilities of 330 million, it speaks to a scenario where we almost 15 times the ability to meet our current liabilities. The norm is normally to say for every 1 rand that you owe, you must have 2 rands. With us, we probably have 15 rands for every rand that we owe. We do realize that as the management, we cannot solely rely on the vulnerable business model that we currently exposed to, which is only beneficial depending on circumstances that are beyond the control. We are actively, the management of SFF, trying to find alternative revenue streams, trying to diversify as to how we generate our revenues. Illustrated in the graph is the four graph quadrant where it compares the risk to the return, where we favor in the quadrant which is on the top left hand corner, where we're hoping that there are few projects, there are three projects that we think it is less riskier to embark on and it is higher returns that we can generate, which includes earning the return on the landfill investment that we made that Mr. Nkize referred to, where we're hoping if we can be able to generate a return on that investment, it would be, there's no risk attached to it, and at the same time we're expecting it will be significant return if you consider that more than R1 billion was invested on it. Also, we are looking at our OPC division, which is oil pollution control. Currently, it's only serving the Mossel Bay port. We are hoping to take it across the South African waters. Our GM responsible, which is the general manager responsible for that division, is currently not with us because he's exploring that possibility. We're talking to GMPA with the ability to make it operational in other parts of the country. We are seriously looking at the finished product storage around the, what is referred to, around the Begandi terminal. We also do realize there will be some projects that might be a higher return, but also the risk attached to it is higher. Or in the sense that if we talk to the strategic stocks policy, we don't say the risk is higher, but it's such that it is completely outside of our control. Hence, it is on that far right quadrant where we say this committee will probably be very instrumental in assisting us enable that strategic stocks policy is approved and implemented. That is one of the projects that we are aware that it will be able to restore SFF to its former glory. We are also aware that projects around trading, which also historically the trading business has been part of the SFF, that it's one of the lucrative projects that will be able to also reinforce our balance sheet. However, there is still funding risk around it. If we look in the fact that SFF is still a non-profit organization, the ability to be able to raise the trading book with the banks will be restricted to a certain extent. But unless there could be in another way in the form of government guarantees to be able for us to generate a trading book. We are also making use as much as we could of our current properties that are in our facilities, unoccupied offices that we are leasing out to tenants. All this effort we are embarking upon is because we are trying to diversify away from the storage of crude oil business. Now that it is, because we are aware, if the talk is around increasing the strategic stock for the crude oil, the more you increase the crude stock in our facilities, the more the ability to generate revenue goes away. Because we are generating revenue because we are leasing the empty space, but if we procure and so that, then it means there will be no revenue generating ability. Hence the decision to explore other projects to move beyond just what we call the container phase, the market, where the market is favorable to our business structure. I will come back to the COO with the permission.
So in conclusion, different people have already talked about strike stops, so I'll just go on the same features. He mentioned about the tension that was formed between DOE and SFF. To date, we've produced three documents. The first one is the final proposal that went to the National Treasury. It's stating exactly where we think the income will come from to fund this strategic stocks. The second one, the most important one, was the tax treatment of strategic stocks, because by their nature, they don't rotate until there's a crisis. So the tax implication is to be ascertained and resolved between National Treasury, DOE, and SAR. And then we've also, early this year, we've given a brief on where we think we can locate the infrastructure for strategic stocks. And those are the locations that we've identified. Methods of paying. It's fixing the level of stock that we need to keep, getting the concurrence from the National Treasury levies to be implemented, and then concluding the feasibility studies for the shortlisted flash sites. I think that is the last of my presentation. And I must once more, Chairperson, apologize for the mismatch in terms of what we presented on the board in order to facilitate it to members. I could see the frustration from the members that as they're going through their paperwork, they could not correlate it to our board. It was a presentation, so I apologize for that. We will make the presentation available after this meeting. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, document that you produced now. Can we produce the document now? I think there's one beyond frustration. Because there are quite important things we're taking through there that we haven't seen or in opposition to this for the document that we have. And see what, when this happens. We can lose sight of the strategic discussion and now focus on this frustration of how documents are being used. Okay. I don't know if I should thank you for the presentation. Deputy Minister, do you have any comments before we ask honourable members for questions?
No comment as such, Chairperson. I just want to also say I think it's really most unfortunate and actually unacceptable that members would have to be subjected to PowerPoint presentation that they have not been able to read, and which was one of the reasons that they had asked that even if they don't have all the PowerPoint, that they should have been a base document, because that would have then enabled members to have read the document, and this would then just be talking to the document. But just in terms of the Excel 2 presentations, I think clearly there's a lot of synergy and there's a lot of things that I'm sure honorable members would want to highlight, and hopefully the education will not make us digress from those strategic issues that need to be discussed. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Deputy Minister. Mr. Nkota, just there is an issue that we didn't request to, that is in the relation to the board and the management of SF. We can show the rights here in the discussion. But how many of the six tanks at Dana Bay do you say are in use? Because I see what's happening at Milnerton. Honorable Fan Dallin has always said he sees empty tanks.
I don't know. I'm a delusional machine.
So you're confirming that he was right.
Yes.
They are
empty. Yes.
So how many of the ones, I didn't hear that. I can see what you say, but
thank you, Chair. We've got six in total. Two are used for strategic stocks, and then four are then utilized for commercial customers.
But they have
Nana MG.
Okay. Honorable members, so. So, what is self saying?
Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to answer or to enhance on the answer that has been given. Honourable members, I'm Chris Cooper. I was a corporate planner, except I'm now in an advisory role. The question seems to also ask what was happening with Milnerton. Milnerton is essentially empty, with the exception of three tanks that are used for commercial use, primarily going to Chevron Refinery. Those are the small tanks, 200,000 barrels each. The six tanks at Saldana are the large tanks, 7.5 million barrels. Two of those are holding strategic crude for the country. The other four are being used or are being rented out on a commercial basis. I think that perhaps more fully answers the question that was asked.
All right, can we now move to questions of clarity by honorable members? Honorable Mahande Sara, Honorable Makubela Mashere, Honorable Van Dalen, Honorable Kameni, Honorable Efrizi.
The presentation by DOE on page 17, it refers to a draft policy which was submitted to cabinet in 2012. Now, not in so many words, I want to understand the status of the policy. not in so many ways, just the status of the policy. I need a strategy. And then on page 19, because English is not our first language, I don't understand bullet three. You are saying a ministerial submission was drafted requesting approval of the proposed funding mechanism, and this sentence does not suggest whether the draft was submitted where it was supposed to, you know, go or not, because my little understanding of English doesn't assist me on that part, Mr. Macleod. This list, I need to clarify it. You drafted this a request for approval, then what? And then on page 21, in terms of the progress, bullet 4 suggested in the development of the new infrastructure, BBBE will be promoted, or you will incorporate the promotion of BBBE. Are you saying now BBBE is nowhere to be found? So I need clarity on that. You spoke about the need for a new refinery and made mention of the NDP, where it says that by 2017 the refineries should be up and running and in good status. Now, in terms of this particular issue of the shortage of refineries, where I'm sitting, I know that there's Project Umthombo, which addresses this issue of the shortage of refineries. Now, where is that project? Is it dead? Is it alive? How far are you in terms of that project? Because 2017 is around the corner. And there are many projects that are there that are addressing this issue of the shortage of refineries. So I need to understand that. On the slide, I don't know which one, because it decided to sabotage us, and that thing should not happen again because it won't be tolerated. It's a pity that you have a very lenient chairperson. Chairperson should have chased you out of this meeting with your presentation so that you present it amongst yourselves, because once it does not reach us, definitely you are dislodging some of us. Who always read this presentation. That thing should not happen. In one of your slides, you are mentioning Bagen terminals, and in the presentation of DOE, Bagen terminal was mentioned as an alternative storage mechanism that could assist in whatever challenges that are there. Where I'm sitting, I know there are fundamental problems between Chevron and Bagen, problems which landed to our committee. And the last time I checked, those problems were not sorted out. Now, I don't know how you're hoping to utilize Bagen. Is Bagen in operation? Because the last time we checked, there were those issues which were unresolved. So I need to be clarified whether the problems between Bagen and Chevron after our interactions with NERSA were resolved. Is Bagen in operational? And then how are you hoping to utilize a Bagen terminal? And Mr. Makula, you alluded to the fact that amongst the emerging risks that there are unplanned refinery shutdowns. Which refineries are you referring to? is because I think that we have an understanding as to which refineries are you referring to. It would be easy for us to have a clear understanding of this emission risk. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My question is around the issue on policy that says retailers must be able to have in stock 14-day supply, according to what you are saying here. But you mentioned the looming, not so much of a crisis, but fuel shortages there and there in pockets of the country. And you mentioned that a direct result of a shutdown, unplanned refinery shutdowns for either maintenance and so on. Now, the issue is if how far are you monitoring the compliance of the policy aspect of the 14 days fuel supply? Because if you are correctly doing your work on monitoring, there shouldn't be such, and you should be able to ensure that suppliers comply with this 14 days, but equally, the shutting down of refineries should be in such a way that it does not affect the supply of fuel in the way that it has done most recently, which says to me there is some kind of non-compliance there and there with regard to retailers of fuel. It's commendable to say that once you've seen the challenge, you are arrested in this way. We are meeting daily so that you can be able to guide properly. But then it goes back to say your enforcement mechanism on our own policies is a challenge, and it means it will be a challenge even in moving to the future, because you can see that those that are the multinationals that are operating in this space, at times I don't want to say do as they wish. They don't comply, and then you have to come in behind them and sort of police them, because you police them in such a way that you are trying to safeguard your interests. But it means that their interests and your interests do not come to a central point where they match. Can you maybe share with us your operations, how you operate in that space, Mr. Mashable, because it will give us an understanding on how best are you putting in place a system to enforce compliance. Now, the drug policy that was proposing a 6 cents per liter levy, so that this money can be used in an effort to get SSF to operate in a manner which would assist with storage capacity build and so on and so forth. What I would want to understand is also how far has the policy been shelved? By the look of things, the policy is shelved somewhere. Some aspects of the policy are being implemented, and some aspects of the policy are just put in abeyance. Can we just understand in detail what are the pros and cons, and why are some aspects just put in abeyance? And then SSF says that you are operating in a model that says you're not a business, but you want to get to a point where you operate in business space. This limits you because you can't go to bank and get guarantees and be able to expand, because you are in this space that says maybe you operate based on this what you call access given place for you, but you are not a business per se. As much as you are collecting levies or collecting revenue from your storage and all vessels and so on, you are just a baby within the department and in this space. Well, I'm saying, Chair President, they put in some proposals on how best can they operate in the business space. And then it then goes back to say, perhaps we should look at this entire, in this policy space in its entirety, because as much as even if the draft policy was put in place, they get what they've asked to get, they would be limited in their operations and in the way they would want them to strategically operate. But then the question then resides with us on what do we want to achieve in our quest to actually have strategic bulk capacity and storage. How far are we willing to move in the policy space and give guidance in policy and in terms of capacitating them with the correct business model things that can make them operate in that space? I would leave it at this and just get these two questions. Thank you.
Yes, Chairperson. You know, if we are dealing with a strategic fuel fund, now the name says it all. It must be to maintain the strategic stocks of South Africa. You know, you are specialist in the field, in the area. Now the ministerial directive tells you that you need a 10 million barrels a day and that we need a 40-day reserve. When the government says that's what you must keep, then they must give the money for it. I mean, you can't have the government tell you must keep something and tell you go and earn the money, be a business and go make the profit and then keep the stocks. It doesn't seem like it's logical. But then again, you do have 2 billion rand in investment. So it looks like you've become an investment company rather than buying oil stocks. I mean, with the oil price as low as it's now, I would think it's a better investment to buy crude oil and store it until the price goes up again. Then what is to put that at 2 or 3% in the bank on a sure investment just so that the company can start running? You're an entity that is funded by government and that's, well, if that is what government wants, then that's what they must pay for. I mean, Sudana has a capacity of 40 million or 45 million barrels of crude, and then we have the 7.5 million barrel storage we have here. I don't know what Ugis can hold. Ugis, the mine, can also hold a lot. I suppose that's roughly about 50 million barrels of stock. And I think we only have about 10 million barrels of stock, which is about 10 days stock if I'm right, my calculations. So this, the stocks is way too low. So the minister tells you we must keep a certain amount of stock, and they don't give you the money, so you can't fulfill your mandate. That doesn't sound right to me. And then, then you ask for more storage. Now this is what's puzzling me. You ask for more storage space because you can't store enough, but you are renting out because you can't utilize it all. Now that doesn't make sense to me. Unless you have become a business and you are dependent on the income from that storage you are renting out, then I can understand why you are renting it out. Otherwise it should be reserved for strategic stocks. I mean, if that's what it was built for, that's what it should be used for. And then they should be full all the time. They shouldn't be empty. Then you don't have to keep a stock tank every day to see if it's halfway or a quarter away. It is full. You know it's full. And then in pre-1994, I know we had huge stock oil, crude oil price, because we were at the heyday that as well. But we... of sanctions, and South Africa was reliant on its own devices to keep crude oil. Then after 1995 there was this huge sell-off of crude oil out of the mines and out of all the stockpiles. Now, I think that's why you had such a good turnover at the time, because you were selling stocks and you were not replenishing it. That's why you would show that that big windfall at that year. I think if you would go back further forward, it will be a trend that was up there. It would be a spike that you see. If I'm wrong, then please tell me. But that's why you would only go to 1994, and I'm free there. And then I would like to know, how far are you with the litigation in the Morgan Stanley and the Vigo case? And how do they affect your business, the day-to-day running and your current position. Then I see in the Auditor General's report, it was note 26 in the annual financial statement, and I quote, it says, I don't want to be misquoted, management has not exercised adequate oversight responsibility regarding compliance and related internal controls. Now, how far are you in addressing that issue? Is that part of why we are at this problem? Because you didn't fulfill the oversight role to make sure that we have enough stocks? I would like to know, and what did you put in place to fix that problem so that it doesn't reoccur? Because if there's a problem, people tell you there's a problem, then you fix the problem. What do you do to fix it? And then the Chevron closure, I want to know if it has anything to do with the granting of the Bergen license. And then you were talking about refineries that are going to be shut down because they are old. Is Chevron one of them? And then they said that they might close if Bergen license is given. And then I get the feeling that the state then would be crowding out comes with the refinery like Chevron. And then why was Bergen then allowed, or why did NASA allow them to build more storage capacity if we have all these empty tanks at Milliken that's not being used? I mean, that seems like a dual thing. If we were told there's no more storage capacity anywhere, and that's why the tanks need to be built there. When I said that I feel over there, empty, everybody says, you are senile, you see things that are actually full of oil, or actually full of and few, and that was not to be the truth, because you've just confirmed that they are actually empty. Yeah, and they said they were full. They lied to us. So then there's the LPG gas issue, which is a bit bad at this moment. I mean, outside there, I read in the newspaper, and people tell me it's like Mad Max out there. The people are hijacking the gas trucks just to get the gas. I mean, it's crazy. And if we have a shortage of LPG storage facilities, that should be a nice thing for Bergen to get involved in, to build those capacity for those LPG storage and other BE partners to get into the fuel. I mean, if there's a real shortage and it's like it's outside, everybody knows it's a shortage, then that is where you would address it. You wouldn't start to become a competition onto yourself. And then you also keep saying that you want to be autonomous. But I still don't get it. You know, please explain. Why is it so bad to be under CEF? Is it untenable? Do they interfere with your business? Don't they allow you to do things? Why is it so bad to be under CEF? I think if that's right there in the middle, you shouldn't be a business that makes money. You should only be focused on your job, and that is to secure the fuel shortage. And then in 2010, we went on a study group with Parliament with a portfolio committee, and we went to see to Venezuela, and then we went to see President Chavez there. And then President Chavez at the time, he said they would love to use Saldana as a halfway house for storing their crude, because they have a problem when the ships come around Cape Town and they have to travel from there. The time is too long and the seas are rough, and they would like to use South Africa. How far did that talk go? Apparently that was we had looked into it. We thought it would be a lucrative idea, because, and then there was the added benefit that their crude oil is heavy on sulfur, and we needed that for the Christmas, for the farmers to put on the land, and we would be able to take that out of the crude oil, and so there would be an added benefit for South Africa at the time. So I don't know if you were not involved in the talks, or maybe you can just highlight what was going on, or what the talk was, and why it didn't go ahead. Thank you. That's all that I want to ask.
I come back to Honourable Ramen.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Nkuta, I think I must agree with Chair on this resolution, whether the one that he gave us, it's small bones. We wanted some meat. Now it's quite empty. But let me just get to the first presentation. Here you say in your 2006 study, it says that if you were to 100 to run out of fuel for one day, you lose about $1 billion. What is the current now in 2015? How much you lose as a country if we have to go out of fuel? Secondly, you're stating that we are 70% net importers of crude and finished products. What are the proportions in terms of tech suppliers that are there versus the multinational in terms of bringing the products into the country? And again, how much does the country rely on these multinationals? Because if you look at other industries, you've seen them in the construction as well as food. There's a lot of collusion and bullying from these multinationals, especially when they've got monopoly of that industry. They do as they please. How much is the country relying on them? But tomorrow they can just do as they please and the country is held and transformed. Have you checked that? And again, you're saying in terms of your proposals, you're saying the stock that we should keep, it should be a 60-day stock so that we make sure that whatever challenge that we can get into, we were able to survive as a country. What is the current situation? Because that is the proposal that you're saying we should, but what is the current status now? And again, I think the issue of the new players, we get a lot of complaints and in terms of the black players want to be part of to get part of this industry, where there's a confusion between TMPA in terms of they are the owners of the facilities or yourselves. How do you get to access this industry? Because that's where most of the confusion happens. The TMPA owns the infrastructure and there's talks of a lot of 99-year lease with multinationals. Is there any chance that the black players can access this if TMP is 99 years? Can clarify that issue if you've got knowledge of those 99-year lease agreements between the multinationals and as well as the issues of Transnet? As well, and then I saw on that, I hope I'll still get it in more details in terms of saying we need more storage facilities, but I saw just mentioned on that presentation that there are areas that have been identified to say these are the key areas that we need to put storage facilities. Because part of the presentation we were saying that one of the challenges is that some of the storage is sitting at some bay, it's not closer to the market, where we identified where are the key areas in the country, so that we make sure that when we build those storage facilities, they respond to the need of what we are trying to do. And again, what is the proportions in terms of the black suppliers them participating in terms of supplying fuel in the country. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. With the two refineries, capacity of I think about 700,000 barrels a day, and I think what happened in 2005 and 2006, if I'm not mistaken, make it a necessity for South Africa to have a critical stock holding. Now, apart from Saldanha Bay, Monmouth and Oorgies that we have, on the Mkhize's presentation, maybe firstly on the issues and challenges on page 6, has the ESF now, issues and challenges, has the ESF now acquired the equity
I was wondering what is
maybe I was thinking of the members post just before.
No, it's fine. It's fine, really. No problem.
I'll make sure the SFS. I
come for the other.
Is the SFF now acquired the equity stake in the storage facility in Cape Town? Has it been approved by NERSA, the Bergen, I think it's called, Cape Town Terminal? And the Deputy Director General said that Chevron, when the line we closed down, I heard differently. I heard that Chevron is spending something like 400 million rand on upgrades on the refinery. So I don't know if I'm wrong, but
And won't it maybe then be a case of overstock in this country? Durban is also relational. What is the SS stake in this agreement? And how does it affect the economy? If we import to this storage facility in Cape Town now, and how will the money be raised? Will it be through additional tariffs, levies to the consumers? Phase 10, proposed stock holding. Wasn't the stock holding 21 days before now raised to 42 days in crude oil? How does that also, how is this going to be paid? Who's going to pay for that? How much is that going to cost the consumer? There's also, you know, the exchange rate shows a 5% increase for the first time in May this year. This is basically, you know, our emphasis must actually be on exports, not on imports. You know, everything that we import makes the value of our rand lower. We need to really look at maybe helping the SFF with all the revenue that they've created. The Department of Energy, for one, is bounded by the mandate to oversee efficient energy supplies for delivery to this country, and this means the entity's role in doing that as well. So maybe the entity must more ruling for the refineries. We just ran out of, because of the refineries, we ran out of bitumen, for one, which is a byproduct of the refineries that's used in so many things, roads, the fencing industry, so many industries. The refinery is crucial to this country and the economy. Honorable Van Dalen mentioned the 2 billion rand investment. I also thought, more locally investment in the, and the refinery is actually saying that the Department of Energy should look after it. It's one of the, and just on that, maybe, and instead of investing in crude oil, now the forecast in the world market is that crude oil is going to go down to something as low as 25 rand a barrel. A dollar, yes. The supply demand, I'm very confused today. The supply demand thing has already changed. The demand has gone down so much. So of course the supply then might also drop their prices. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Shadowson. And let me say, this is not an afterthought, it's just a question which I had omitted, which also I would think would be directed to the Deputy Minister. Perhaps, should we not look at a situation where we commission another commission on strategic stock policy? Because the one that has taken place was in 2000. And you can understand how much the economy has grown from 2006 up until now, it's almost 10 years. But also, this commission gave the recommendation that South Africa needed to have 60 days of storage. But then if you look at OECD countries, I understand we are not OECD countries, but we are in between. We are a commission, we are an economy in a transition economy that is in between. And that is growing or has grown from 2006 up until now. Should we not be looking at following their policies on or their guidelines on those countries having about 90 days of storage? That's just a proposal that I wanted to put to the minister on how we should be looking at our strategic job policy moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I wanted to second the Honorable Mahambehlala
with regard to the manner in which the SFF has presented these presentations to the committee. I was of the view that you must be chased away. It's unfortunate that some of my colleagues, of course, have raised a number of questions relating to the presentation. But I'm not sure how and when are we going to get these presentations from the SFF, because to me it's very important. We must have this presentation so that we can peruse it after some months to come. Because to me, I'm not sure as to whether what is it that I'm going to refer to in the next meeting, if they're going to come that year. I'm afraid that they might repeat the same thing that they did to us today, because they are sure, they're quite sure that we don't have this presentation. Unless I was to send it through the Secretary of the Committee. But in my view, they were supposed to be chased out of this meeting so that we remain with their principal here, the department, the Deputy Director General. But suffice to say, Chair, let me ask some three questions here. One is for the SFF. What is the current status of your facilities? That's one. Very short there. Number two, what are the challenges related to the upgrade of the refineries and plans to build a new one? This one is for the department. You made mention of refineries. Operators are hesitant to upgrade your facilities because to them it does not make an economic sense. What are the reasons for this thing? Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Minister, colleagues. Without repeating what my colleagues have presented to you with regard to SFF, maybe we need to reserve one name on the coffee to say it. Let us give them a chance. Perhaps it was because of communication, I'm not sure, but I'm not speaking on their behalf. I'm just thinking, air is to you, man. Sometimes things go out of the hand. But I've got three questions. Presentation by Umaki. On page 20, update on progress. That statement that says there has been a delay in the process, in the processing of the request, by the National Treasury. And you said partly due to staff changes. What changes? We want to know, because it is not there. It goes together with its second bulletin. No formal response received from the National Treasury to date. What is the problem? Was there any follow-up made with in that regard? It was mentioned in the presentation, I think, Honorable Mohamed Salah. Ask around this question, but I just want to make myself understand. To say, for instance, construction of new refinery. Meanwhile, we have got the old ones. We have the maintenance plan for those old ones, because we do not like want to
to see the situation of Eskom, where maintenance and the operation goes together, and ultimately maybe we'll have a load shedding. I don't know what we are going to call it in the oil, but with regards to
back to the bicycle
and stages and so on. Thanks, Chairman. Those are the questions I wanted to ask.
Thank you very much for our members. In this order, that will be Department of Energy and then we go to step. Just last step. I have no intention of confusing these two questions that have already been posed. The first one is with regard to commissioning another study. Given the changing crude landscape, so I think that as we respond to that, talk about it, because you know part of the one of the things that is arising is that so that they shift from Middle Eastern countries to African countries. So what's the future? So and if there's going to be more developing capacity in the African continent, so are that implications for our policy for strategic stocks? So I think I just wanted to add to the issue that just with regard to again, just to contextualize the question, I don't know which of the members from officials from DOE were present. The question arises because we're met with NERSA to explain their decision on the contract. And then issues arose with regard to the questions by Chevron. So that's the context of the question that arose. So when you respond to that. That's all from my side. I think we have sufficient questions from the honorable members. So can you just start with you?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just wanted to maybe just in terms of directing the responses to say, I will ask that the first question that we addressed quite comprehensively is the issue of the policy, because a lot of the questions and a lot of the outstanding issues arise from that in terms of the fuel stocks and the refineries and everything else, and of course the financing around that, which also impact on what the accidental business model that SFF has. So I think just a clear indication of what has happened, where it's at, would be the first one, because it will give a context. Related to that, of course, would be the issue of the changing parentage of SFF, which has obviously had quite an impact in terms of their relationship, who champions what for them. That comes up. But I think the first issue, Chairperson, if you'll allow, is the department can just clarify that, because I think all the other things flow from that. Then we'll respond to the other questions. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead. We will have at some point, just so that there's no confusion as we respond. At some point, we may have to have a discussion, a conversation that looks at the whole value chain, not just strategic stocks, but the relationship of strategic stocks with what we call commercial stocks, the role of if we arrive,
about the role of private companies and so on and so on. So, and the security of supply and so on. So, I think corporate, and let's answer the question, but I think to deal comprehensively with this, we may have to return the discussion that's not just to be strategic of stocks.
So thank you very much, Chairperson, and also for the direction from the Deputy Minister. Let me start perhaps by saying that on the policy side, I think there is a need for us to take advantage of the fact that the policy framework has not yet been finalized, to then say things have changed in the global space. Things are changing in the region, static. And how does that impact on the policy framework going forward? And things are changing, Chair. One, Africa now accounts for more than 50% of our crude imports. And those countries in Africa, there are two countries, Nigeria and Angola. They are not as far as where we used to get crude from. What is the impact of that? So will it have an impact on the way we package the policy going forward? Secondly, huge storage facilities being built in Mozambique that have been built already. They were not there when we first started the policy. How do they impact? Because you then, if you have storage there, you are able to impact demand in Mpumalanga in case of a, you know, of an emergency. Now, should we then have perhaps a regional approach? Botswana has built huge storage tanks since 2010, and they are filling them up. That then means that we may have to now take advantage of what has happened and see how then it impacts on the policy going forward. So I think it is a need to revisit. In our country, we've seen a lot of companies, private sector, investing in storage, import terminals basically. In here, this one, the Bergen one, is a private sector venture, through and through. It's just that they needed approval from government. There's one that has been approved in the Kufa, one approved in Richards Bay. Those change the game altogether in terms of the strategic stock framework. When the policy was developed, we didn't have the multi-product pipeline and its associated terminals. Now, how does that impact? Those are the issues that I think we will have to revisit. And Chair, I fully support that there needs to be a discussion on the whole value chain, because there are a lot of new players, there are a lot of significant historically disadvantaged South Africans operating in this space independently, holding their own. They need to perhaps you know, be brought from, they remain hidden, but there are quite a number of them, and that dynamic also impacts on how the policy evolves going forward. So that would be my response on the policy side, that there is room for us to perhaps look at integration. We talk integration, but the way we proceed, in my view, as a country, sometimes we don't necessarily, as you know, perhaps on our side as officials, we don't respond to pronouncements by our principals on integration to the level to which we need to. So, Chair, with that, I think the SFF, separating SFF from SEF, I think that we've looked at the models globally. And having a strategic petroleum reserve company separate is a way that other countries have gone. And I think that those that have not gone that way, it's because they are very strong national oil companies. Now, in our view, we think that the decision that has been taken you know, by the minister, that we must have legislation prepared to establish, you know, this petroleum reserve company. I believe that that is the way that we need to go, because it's in keeping with what has happened. SFF has actually gone to look at the model that have worked in other countries. We have studied extensively the U.S. petroleum reserve that currently is sitting at over 700 million barrels. And with an aim of getting to a billion barrels, that's how much crude they want to store. So I think we believe that there is a need for an SFF that is focused on its mandate. I don't think they are constrained by SEF at the moment, but you know, when you want to release those stocks in a case of an emergency, you want a seamless, you know, a way of releasing it. Goes from the minister to the organization to say release stocks. It doesn't have to go through shareholders, different shareholders. This is what we would want to have. Just on the, I think it's important for me to clarify the shutdown, first of all. No refinery has been closed. They are on unplanned maintenance shutdown. So Chevron has not closed. They have an unplanned maintenance shutdown. So that was one of the questions that was asked. And I think it's important that I clarify, no refinery has been closed at all. What happens is that every year we get a schedule of shutdowns, because these shutdowns are required by law in terms of the what the inspector of machinery expects all operating facilities like refineries. Now, we get that schedule. We make sure that there is no there is no overlap in terms of refineries. So you can't have the Shell and BP one going on a shutdown at the same time as the engine. The challenge comes when they have to come back from their scheduled maintenance. So you find, for example, that if the Sabra refinery has to come back the 31st of July. Come 1st of July, they come and say, well, we think we are going to have another week. Then that week is when the other refiner was supposed to go on shutdown, because this one was supposed to come back. So there is, unfortunately, we don't have enough room for them not to, you know, go on a shutdown back to back. There isn't such room, because units that go on for maintenance at different times. But all we make sure is that there is no overlap. The overlap happens because they don't stick to their schedule. But they don't stick to their schedules because these are old machines. That's the reality. They are old machines, one. Secondly, which is an issue that we are beginning to look at, is other skills to do maintenance. Now, these are private sector run facilities. However, the maintenance crews come from all over. These maintenance crews, they move. They move from Eskom, the same maintenance crews. They move from Eskom, they move to Sapre, they move all over. So there could be in this country an issue of those maintenance crews and this level of skill. And this is not only for energy, it's for all these, high-tech, basically, facilities. They're maintained by the crews move around. This is an issue that we will need to confront, but globally, as an economy, to say, our maintenance crews, are they not letting us down? The refineries that are on shutdown currently, Chevron reported to us that they are operating at 10%. That's the reality. They can only produce up to 10%. That's coming from there. So then the Shell and BP refinery have been having challenges. This is the Sakras refinery. Has been having challenges. They informed us yesterday that they are now back fully online. The engine refinery was on a planned maintenance shutdown. It came back last week. However, there are some units that they apparently are still causing problems there. Sasol Secunda is on a planned maintenance shutdown. The Natref refinery in Sasoltec is fully operational. There are no problems there. PetroSA is operating at 50% capacity. That is what is happening. So that is the basically the picture as to what is happening. If I can then go to this chair, maybe I'm moving too slow, I can speed up. But I thought I need to be a bit deliberate on this matter. On the refinery, the new refinery, the NDP, the NDP indicates that a decision must be taken by 2017. So we are not waiting for 2017. But the NDP is saying the decision, government must take a decision. The government wanted to take a decision earlier. In fact, they had taken a decision on Mpompe. Everyone was up in arms saying that we don't need Mpompe. There is excess supply globally and all of this. But at the time, we were convinced that we have to build a refinery. But we're told, no, there's excess in India, which is true. There is excess in India. But the refineries in India were built
for export purposes. However, India now is looking to reverse that. So suddenly, that excess capacity that you had, because their economy is growing, they're saying, no, first reconfigure those refineries for domestic and not for export. Suddenly that evaporates. Now the same people were crying that this is overcapacity in the world, it won't be there when we now have to scramble for, you know, for products globally. If people want to challenge that, I think that we will have to, you know, look at the facts. India's, you know, policy environment is changing. So we're all saying that, well, those people who oppose are saying that there is that. And that is going to evaporate. I think that sometimes maybe I get emotional because my colleague, Mr. Jesus, they develop policy every day. That 24 billion liters, we have to make sure it moves and it's available. So for us, it becomes emotional because when you have no product to supply Joburg, we have no option. It is not, we don't take those things lightly. So these matters do become emotional when people come and tell us that we don't need this, we don't need this, when we can see the numbers speak for themselves. So Mthombo, I think the challenge now is to reconfigure Mthombo because of the challenges of, of the capacity of the National Oil Company to lead that, that whole process. We believe that government should lead and restructure the Mthombo. And we still firmly believe that Mthombo must happen. And we still firmly believe that the location is correct. But of course, the reality of the USA is such that at the moment they are not as strong as they were when the project started. So we need to restructure that project. I also want to say that in our presentation, there is mention of a delay. In the middle of all of these, we restructured in the department. That also, I think, is important for us as a committee to inform the committee. In December 2013, we decided to centralize policy development. That's what happened. So the issues around also the personnel and so on, they speak to that. Now, what then happened was, in 2014, electricity assumed for both ourselves as energy and treasury, electricity became the priority. And all energies were focused on trying to resolve what was even then, first quarter of 2014, being seen as something coming in as far as the Eskom challenge is concerned. So it is a fact that perhaps because of that, the carbon space did not get the necessary support because I think all our energies were focused on trying to mitigate what we thought was coming on our side. And I don't think it's a lack of trying from the team and us. You know, I think that is a matter that we need to correct. I think I've indicated on the
then the on the reliance on multinationals. That is a fact. We rely in our country on multinationals, including our own multinational called SASO. But that the reality is that is the state of play in the liquid fuel space. There is progress that has been made in growing historically disadvantaged companies owned by historically disadvantaged South Africans. I think it's important that at some point they need to come out of the shadows, because they are quite significant. I mean, there is one company, a black-owned company, that moves 4 billion liters per annum in the country. And we hardly hear about that.
So
4 billion liters of fuel. That's out of 26, and I mean that is quite significant. So you look at the figures that have, and these are top-notch petroleum experts. These are not fly-by-night or anything like that. These are people who had worked for these oil companies 10, 20 years. They then went out, most of them, you know, they then went out and started their own companies. They are successful. And I must say here, they are being supported very strongly by the state-owned companies, such as Eskom and Transnet. They've been critical, those two companies, particularly Transnet, in ensuring that you know, the whole empowerment drive is supported. PetroSA also is central in, you know, incubating a lot of historically disadvantaged companies and making them stand their own. Perhaps I'll be seen here to be talking about one or two, but there is a company of black women. That is the only company that is listed to lift crude oil out of Iraq today, as we speak. So these are success stories, perhaps, that are not, you know, by nature triggers. They don't, it's not easy to take them out of the shell. But they are there, and they are doing a great job. I would request assistance from, with your permission, from Mr. Mkhize on some of the issues. I think that becomes emotional.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can't agree with you more when it comes to the whole issue of saying let's look at the whole value chain. And also, as I indicated earlier on, that we've got strategic stocks as a subsection of the whole energy security space. And therefore, it ensures security, but more from situations of catastrophe as well as the CDA shortage. Maybe allow me to start off by just paying attention in terms of the status of the police. We are not actually in a void vacuum, because the proposals on the table seek to improve the policy from one of looking at only crude to then include products and change the time frames that we are looking at. The policy in place remains, the policy that is currently operational remains in place, and we are looking at the 10.3, which is almost around 14 days of a dock, is one the ministerial directive that is in place. And then looking forward, when now we're talking about this whole issue so even the oil companies, they are not currently obligated to hold
the release of stock, because the policy as proposed is not in place. And we'll have to go back and engage on the police, because after the draft was issued for public comment, we engaged thereon. But as already alluded by Makula, we did not go on the full process, citing also amongst other things the need to resolve the operating model for SFF and be in a position also to look at the whole funding model that we are going to use in this process. We have also engaged other jurisdictions to learn from them how they deal with strategic stocks or stockholding. So the 14 days on is not operational, and hence there is no monitoring and enforcement taking place in that space. That is why at the beginning when I was talking about issues and challenges, I highlighted the issue of the challenge of monitoring and enforcing, because those companies will be holding stock and don't want a situation where you think some stock is held. But when now the COPO is the same, you find that there is no stock that has been held as was envisaged. When I'll just try to then address the specific question as I go through, is that the PE in part is not that it's not incorporated now, but we are saying that still PE aspect will have to be incorporated in the process of erecting the installing the infrastructure. We have, as already said, in terms of promotion of historically disadvantaged South Africans, also expanded the import and export controls so that we can have ADSA importing. That was done soon after in 2006, and people are able to come to the fore in that regard. When it comes to the Bergen also, Bergen, it's an approval of the project, but the project is not operational yet. And then in terms of retailers, as I've already alluded to, we also want to require retailers as such. We require the wholesaling arms to be the ones that keep the product, because for retailers, it's going to be too distributed, and also would like to be very balanced to the retailers looking at their relative sizes as compared to the oil companies themselves, because most of the oil companies that we have here have got a refining arm as well as a wholesaling arm. And then what the 6 cent levy that was put forth is also part of the proposal, but we don't want to have all the figure, because the figure could change, as we have already said that we are looking at that it's been changing since the last time, and therefore that will require a review and then be able to implement that which is most appropriate. And in as far as the whole NPO status of SFF and their location, etc., said that we are looking at we have been tasked to look at the legal framework that is all going to be able to govern them. But in doing that, we need to start at the strategic viewpoint to see how then they need to be mandated, what is their strategic objective, and then link to that is how then they need to be structured. I don't want to be engaging in discussions that are more like policy debate. I think it's a matter of us going back to a drawing board and discuss that, and then come back to say this is what all things took me to look at that we think should be the way forward in as far as SFF is concerned, and this is the legal instrument that needs to be used that is going to be help us to achieve our objective. And when it comes to the issue of closure of the refinery, we're not saying that it's going to be a refinery that is being closed, but we're talking of these refineries being frequently on unplanned shutdown. Sometimes when they're planned, they are this planned shutdown, not seeing them coming back, at the planned stage. That's causing overlap where no overlap were envisaged in original plan. And then these shutdowns also, the
companies themselves have got their own maintenance plan, which then at this for the statutory maintenance level, we then engage with them, like Simakwele has already indicated. And in terms of the state crowding out refineries, the whole idea is about the strategic nature of refining the country, because we also look at from the fact that not in the refinery in the country has not been built without any kind of government assistance in one form or another. And hence then think that there could be other strategic reasons other than commercial reasons for one to be able to build a refinery, looking at where we are, hence requiring the role of the state in as far as ensuring that there is refining capacity. Considering also the fact that has been highlighted here, for example, the issue of bitumen and other products other than petrol, diesel, paraffin, etc. Because sometimes we tend to talk of that, but there are other products that are required by the economy. And when you've got a refinery, you are able to also get those benefits. And then, in terms of the issue of other refineries, there's also an element of competition. I must say that, fortunately now, I'm focusing more on competition. I used to be also maybe worse off emotionally within the department. We've got all this shutdown. And really, I guess sometimes it to go to me sometimes that, you see, we end up in a space where we are like more like literally begging the industry to produce, to do what they are supposed to do in any event. Because when the problem in terms of production, it is the country that looks bad and not an individual company. And hence, we need to address it, particularly looking at it from that end. I think the issue of the gas supply has been addressed adequately. And then with regard to nuclear getting on infrastructure, we noted this as a challenge emanating from the, even past where we tried in terms of the Petroleum Pipelines Act to talk of access, third-party access. It's not working as a mistake. But we're also engaging with MTNPA. That is, we're engaging with Transnet as a whole. And the leases that they have are not necessarily 1980 leases now. I think they've moved away from this very long-term leases. But what we've had in the contract, we've had all companies coming to our doors, knocking and complaining that they've got a problem with these leases being terminated and being them requiring them to renew them on a more stricter basis from Transnet. And we also engaged both NERSA and TNTA so that, because they were like, they spoke to this machine, they were trying to make sure that what they require is the same. So this is why then as a regulator, TNTA and NERSA, they've also got their own MOU to be able to deal with it. And the storage facilities that have been put forth are also more of the proposal, the proposed one, in terms of dealing with closeness or proximity to the market, that's been put forth. And then, going further, the issue of focusing on exports and not imports is also a challenge, in the sense that we need to look at our natural disposition. As a country, we don't have food waste. The leak that we even had, which is about 5,000 barrels per day, no longer operational, and therefore we need to import crude oil until maybe you get our shale gas or whatever and be able to have the GTL facilities, then we are going to be in a better position as a country. On that, thanks. I think
thank you.
I'll leave the legal man to send a brief message to my two colleagues, but we need to then address some of the issues that have come up. Current status of the facility, Saldana is fully operational. The nursing is undergoing integrated testing, after which there shall be a refurbishment. In terms of why we need storage when we have storage, the facilities were designed for crude oil. The strategic stocks policy requires that we keep clean products, diesel, petrol, and jet. And those products cannot be stored in the facilities that we currently own, specifically for Saldana, but also for health reasons or safety reasons in Winlock, and we cannot now introduce clean products. Let me then also touch on the issue of the Venezuelan crude. The crude that they were interested in storing in Sardana is a low-density crude oil, which does not fit in within the specification of crude oils we can accept in Sardana. So while we need them to store, they need to store what our pumps and pipes are able to process. And unfortunately, the Venezuelan crude grades they were planning to bring across did not fit within the specification. Then another comment on office. Office is not operational. It's an care and maintenance because of environmental issues of having stored crude oil before there. It's no longer suitable under the NEMA Act to store crude oil in those mines because of mining activity as well. In the area, there's a lot of blasting, and if you do so in a cold cavern and there's blasting nearby, you will just quickly crack the cavern itself and create an environmental pollution issue. Now, within a minute, Chair, let me then get into the big and TFF question or set of questions. SFF is not an equity investor in the terminal. SFF is interested in the terminal because the strategic stocks policy calls upon SFF to involve BEEs when they require storage facilities. That's one. So once that storage terminal is operational, the stocks policy says specifically that we must involve BEEs and we must create an opportunity for them to participate through SFF. So that's one. Secondly, anybody who's actually building storage facilities creates an advantage for strategic stocks infrastructure because they'll be building entries, they'll be building receiving pipes, and the infrastructure. Ours then is just to be like a neighbor and build two or three tanks of strategic stock spaces next to the facilities already operational commercially. The importance of following that model is certainly to save money on strategic stocks, but secondly, when there is a crisis, you are able to quickly put product into a facility that on a day-to-day basis operates commercially. You don't become an operational reserve yourself.
I'm just quickly trying to get through these questions, Chair. I think, having said that, let me give our General Counsel a chance to comment on the physical SFF matter and more importantly, SFF matter. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, on the Morgan Stanley, we had an exception application which was done by Morgan Stanley, and it was dismissed, and that sort of interrupted the court process. But we are back now on finalizing the pleadings, and we have applied for the court date. Visigro, the matter has been taken out of court because Visigro has given us a settlement proposal. Now we're busy discussing the settlement proposal. We've scheduled a number of meetings to try and resolve the matter amicably. If we don't find each other on the settlement proposal, then we'll have to go back to court. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I think we've run out of time, and I haven't even cross-referencing my question to see if everything has been answered. Honorable Mohamed Kala and the Deputy Minister.
Chair, with CFF, I did not hear them submitting any apologies. I want to check where is their CEO and the chairperson, and why are they not here? And also in your senior management structure, when are you intending to have more women? Because currently it's 1 out of 6.
On that, I think there was a communication problem in terms of this specific meeting. The chair spoke to her this morning, saying that she should have received the invitation, but she didn't. So it was one of those issues in this specific meeting around communication that has led to our chairperson, Dr. Sanki Mahayane, not implemented today. Now, in terms of the CEO, I haven't seen the CEO for a week. He's locked, I cannot provide any more information other than that. He's not been in the office since Tuesday. Then, Chairperson, then the issue of women's representation. Whenever we have a vacant position, we always try as far as possible to advertise to all the major publications. Maybe it's just the nature of the business they're operating in, but on most of the interviews that I've participated in, there's been very few women that have come in for interviews. We are addressing it. We now are in the women in oil program because we believe that it's better if we can actually recruit from within, and we've identified the ladies that are capable of hearing NSF come forward and fully participate in the women in oil program. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, let me be also upfront and say some of the challenges that we're seeing is what DDG Makubela referred to in terms of some of the internal disalignment within the department. We have a situation where the policy is concentrated under one branch, which obviously means it's not humanly possible to actually manage all that. We have tried, I've tried on a number of occasions to actually say those different areas must go to their respective branches. But it is not happening for a number of reasons, among them, humans are creatures of habit, but also apart from that, you also have some of the unions wanting to have a say and all sorts of things, but it is something that's impeding our progress. So sometimes you have a misalignment between those who develop policy and those who actually are implementing policy on a day-to-day basis. Hence, you have now things that have been pending before the last elections and have somehow fallen by the way. So I think we need to take responsibility for some of those issues. Chairperson, in terms of looking at this, it goes back to what you said. We need to look at the entire energy space. And among those issues, why we're looking at the changes in terms of oil policy and what's happening globally, we also cannot lose sight of the fact that this is also being impacted by the discovery of gas and what that would mean for us and our energy mixes in terms of all these things. LPG, for instance, is a critical aspect if we have to look at the issues of heating and lighting, and we've seen what the lack of modern sources of energy do in terms of a lot of particularly the poorest. We have the shack fires because of candles and paraffin and all those areas. Again, here we have a misalignment because I think SEF was running with this policy around LPG and it was taken back. It has now stalled, unfortunately, so we're not really moving as fast as we should be. Yes, Chairperson, we are operating in an industry which is very male, but I think also the efforts by some of those who are leading the industry are not where they should be. We are running a series of workshops as the department, particularly in this month of August, we were looking at what are opportunities for women in the energy space, and we've had from nuclear, petrol stations, axle engines, all these entities, next are coming and saying what are the opportunities and speaking to women, but we have not necessarily had SFF, which was most unfortunate because I think that's where you begin to understand who are the different players in the industry, and particularly women at this point. Chairperson, in terms of looking at the independence or not of SFF, I think would have to look as well and understand what has happened in many other countries. I think all the majors, oil majors that we see today, all started off as national oil companies. Whether it's BP or whoever it is, that's where they started. And because with the support of those governments and assisting them in terms of growth that have gone to this point, I think those are the ones that have been referred to that in their countries they don't necessarily have a strong independent SSF because they're the strong national oil company. So we need to actually be looking to where do we actually want to go as a country. And within that, looking and saying, if we do find sizable discoveries of gas in the Karoo, what does that mean for us? Are we again going to be buying from the majors as always? So those policy debates are important. And unfortunately, we can't get away from the fact that whenever we have debates like that and need to make decisions, we'll be treading on toes. So we must make a decision, are we ready to tread on those toes in the name of national interest, or will we always pander to what everybody is saying? Because I think the issue of Bergen versus Chevron for me was a very clear national interest issue. Why should we continue to have certain entities protected? What's in it for us as a state? And for us, what's more important is the more storage capacity we have to enable us to make sure that we can secure our supply, the better. So the issue of TNPA and NERSA has been sorted because it's about accessing infrastructure. There are certain entities that feel whether it's the infrastructure, they want to hold it. It's not in our interest to do that. We want to have more players because it also impacts on the pricing issue. So I think it's important that we have these discussions so that members can look at these things from all the angles and in the final end say, this is what makes sense for us as a country, as South Africa, because this is what we'll get out of it. Chairperson, you are aware of the unfortunate situation that happened when the sanctions on Iran were imposed. We were very embarrassed as a country because then we're able to negotiate all sorts of things with the U.S. and say, well, let's have the cruise. The crude came to our shores and we couldn't offload it because we don't own any infrastructure to offload that crude. So it was sitting there and we couldn't offload it. So some of these things are not nice to have. They are actually important in terms of energy security for our country. We had the same experience with a speaker from Iran who couldn't take off for over 48 hours from OR Tambo because the majors refused to refuel him. So what does that say about us determining our policies, our politics, and who we relate to? So I think that discussion, I can understand the frustration, I think more than anything else, of Mr. Makurela, because right now when everybody talks energy, they talk electricity. Chairperson, I can tell you, load shedding will look like a walk in the park when we do not have liquid fuels. So we need to actually keep that balance and continue making sure that this is a sector that we need to be protecting. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The Prime Minister, the CEO of SSF, obviously it's not for a week.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, it's a very unfortunate situation that I think SFF and not only SFF has. As I've said, the chairperson was not aware of this meeting. I called the chairperson myself this morning and she had not been informed about this. So I believe there was a problem of communication either within the entity or between the ministry and the chairperson. But in terms of the CEO, I'm also aware that there are challenges around that because it looks like the CEO is actually wanting to leave. As to how that is being managed, I think it's only if the chairperson has been here, maybe she would have been able to inform us about what those processes are and what has brought that on. I do not have the information, so I'm not able to inform you about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. No, Honourable Van Dalen. That brings us to the end of our business for today. When I go beyond 1 o'clock, honorable members are not very happy with me. So I suggest that
we adjourn the meeting at the
I just want to ask you to have an investigation and to see what's going on and come back to the committee with an answer.
With regard to the CEO?
Yes, and what the problem is, we don't want to have the same situation as Professor of Essay. I mean, if that is happening there, we want to know about it as a committee so we can deal with it now. That's
well,
what I wanted to suggest.
We will come back to that.
Yes.
But my information is that the CEO has in fact resigned, but we will come back to
Thanks very much.